Dick Advocaat on Danny Graham there after he grabbed his first goal for the lads in 28 games in glorious victory at Everton. Okay, the podcast is going to be a little bit shorter tonight. This is the Wise Men Say with Stephen Goldsmith, joined by Gareth Barker. Do you want to explain why the podcast is going to be shorter tonight, Gareth?
Because nothing works.
Do you want to be more specific than that?
I turned the computer on, it won't go back.
He's broke off. The studio is what the situation is.
Apparently, I was told to turn it off and on again, so I turned it off and it won't go back on.
All right, so we're in a little studio and time's getting us by, so I'm delighted to say that we are joined tonight by Chris Thompson, editor of A Love Supreme.
Hello, pleasure to be here.
Still running with that,
as usual.
Still running with that title, Chris?
Yeah, we are, yeah. For this season anyway. Might have a new title next season, might make one up.
But you're not going to get yourself on the telly more?
To be honest, I hate doing them. I hate doing television.
So Martin's just not stealing that off you?
Martin's got a better haircut, let's be honest. So he's he's more suited to the television interviews. I'll stick with radio, to be honest with you.
Okay, George Colgan is here as well from The Times. Glad to have you back, George.
Pleasure to be here.
When was the last time you went a weekend without both North East sides losing?
It was 1981, yeah. I think.
Feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
the win, you know, I've just said the glorious win there. It was anything but cliche alert at this stage of the season, the position we're in, that doesn't matter, right?
I think that's exactly it, yeah. And, I mean, the thing is, when a team has a bit of momentum behind it, that can, you know, that can happen. And that obviously started at Stoke a little bit. I was at the Southampton game and that felt like... something sort of, you know, kind of moving on from that. And then if you take that sort of attitude into games, you know, there's a habit of things coming off for you, and that's obviously what happens at Goodison.
I tell you what, Chris, Danny Graham, he epitomises the resurgence in form, doesn't he? Because, I mean, you know, we love to come on here and talk about tactics, formation, systems and all that stuff. But, you know, getting to the bottom line, you want 100% effort first and foremost. See where that takes you.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, he's actually got to be on the pitch because, let's be honest, for the last 2 years, he hasn't really played that much. So if he had got a few more games, then we might have seen a higher work ethic from him. But yeah, certainly, I mean, obviously the work ethic had no kind of correlation with the goal he scored the other day, but the fact that he's in that position, maybe that speaks length. But obviously, you know, we saw a few quotes from Gus Poyet today saying how he didn't have any luck as manager of Sunderland, and it looks like Advocaat's quite a lot of luck since he came in. I think
it's been downplayed a little bit by some, because I mean, Tim Sherwood sort of has Aston Villa flying and everything like that, but the bottom line is Sunderland have 3 wins in 5 games, and yet the general consensus appears to be that we're stumbling across the line again.
Yeah, I mean, it's another late-season resurgence, isn't it? And statistically, Advocaat's done a fantastic job, whether he remains in the position this time next season or you know, even in September, remains to be seen. But let's see how these last 3 games pan out, and we'll go from there, I suppose.
I'll tell you what, Gareth, as well, the whole time Danny Graham was a little bit rubbish for Sunderland before these last few games, he never got hounded out because of his Geordie roots, did he?
No, he didn't. To be fair, Danny Graham, though, like, he's always tried when he's played. You can question his ability, but that
he sorted his fitness levels out clearly.
Yeah, but that can be said of many of the strikers that are currently on our books and ones who've left recently, including Altidor, Fletcher, Wickham to an extent, who's been very good since Advocaat came in. So I don't know. I think, you know, when you think about 28 games, but that's over the course of 2 seasons. It doesn't really seem that many games over the course of 2 seasons. He's never had a run in the team. You know, I know Craig thinks this and we've talked about it on the pod before, but you feel as though someone like Danny Graham, if he'd been given runners in the team like certain players have been, then he'd probably have a few more than one goal that went in off his inner thigh on Saturday.
I thought he was great against Southampton, actually. And I actually thought he was brilliant, and he wasn't brilliant at all. He just did the basics. But yeah, he did the basics spot on. And that attitude rubbed off not only on his teammates, it rubbed off on the crowd. And it was great to see that, because here's a fella who's got every excuse, you know, not to do it or to give up or to hide or to shirk or whatever. And it was him, I thought, who was the architect of that victory.
And it's interesting because that takes us back to I've mentioned this before, but it takes us back to the Queen's Park Rangers game at home when we rolled over the first half. Second half, we put in a spirited display. And despite QPR being bottom and hadn't won away in about a million years or something, the crowd actually got behind the players in the second half, because of the application the players put in, you know, they started a scrap for every ball, try and win the second balls. And Gus Poyet came out and sort of separated himself from that style of player, didn't he, and said, I'm not your guy if you want that. And that was the first time I started to think, are you the guy then for a side like Sunderland and fans like these?
Yeah, I mean, it was so strange even now thinking back to that, you know, he suddenly decided that the style he wanted, he didn't have the players to do it. Well, that's probably fair enough. He didn't have the players to do it. But that in place of it, there was this anti-football. And it was, I mean, Joey Barton, who, you know, he was made to look like Pirlo that night. And no one was pressing him. He had all the time in the world to do what he wanted. And it was this bizarre thing where not just the things you expect from a Sunderland team, you know, the effort and the tackling and the pressing and all that sort of stuff. But there was just nothing. It was anti-football. And you know, I don't think there's any great magic secret to what Advocaat's done. It's about getting a group of players to play somewhere near their potential. You know, we know they're not the best team in the world, the best players in the world, but they're giving a toss and they're trying.
And they're better than bottom three, aren't they? That's the issue some of the fans have had most of the season, Chris, I would say. That these guys, because you look at somebody like Burnley and we say, okay, they're pretty maxed out. They've played to their maximum ability all season, hasn't been enough. And we've always said that you feel with this Sunderland squad, although George has said it isn't great, it shouldn't be in a relegation battle, really.
Yeah,
what do you think it should be?
All you have to do is look at how much money we've spent on players. I know kind of the price tag isn't necessarily a justification for how good a player is or a kind of measure of that, but you look at our midfields, you know. You've got Lee Cantamall there, who Stoke willing to pay something like 5 or 6 million for. You've got Jack Rodwell, who we paid 10 million for, God knows why. And Liam Bridcut, who, or Jordi Gomez, fair enough, we've got Gomez on the cheap, but Bridcut, the managers went out and kind of headhunted him. And we're in a position where we can headhunt players from the Championship, we can, you know, get a fair share of players who maybe are not quite there to scratch the top teams. And I think, you know, players like Johnson, Fletcher in the team, we really should be pushing from mid-table rather than relegation battling. And I think, you know, discovering this late resurgence of form under Advocaat is probably a good measure of where we should have performed all season.
You predicted we'd win by 2 goals before the game, Gareth. Is that how you had it in your head? Is that how it went?
Not really, no.
Was there a little bit more class involved in the way things sort of materialised?
Well, it was more, I think, it was the battle that seems to have appeared in the last few weeks that made me think, you know, we might nick a few goals. It was just a case of some of these chances that we've been creating and not taking have to go in eventually.
And were there chances?
By hook or by crook, they did. I don't know, I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk this week about, you know, Sunderland being lucky. I mean, BT Sport, the coverage beforehand was ludicrous in the way they were going on, basically like Sunderland were cannon fodder. And then at the end, you know, they came out and said, oh, well, you know, some people tried to write Sunderland off. I was thinking, well, yeah, you did, right, about 2 hours ago. It was just bizarre. But I think, you know, the luck thing, yes, the goals, the way they went in were lucky, but like George was saying before, maybe I wouldn't go as maybe far to say it was anti-football, but at the same time, we weren't getting players in the box. We weren't being, you know, committing.
We weren't getting players over the halfway line.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So in this situation, you get 4 or 5. I mean, you look at the final goal, there's 3 or 4 players in the box. You look at Graham's goal, there's 3 or 4 players in the box. You know, if there's one player in the box, it's got less chance of hitting off somebody and going in. It's just percentages. You got less chance of a ball breaking to somebody if you've got somebody there to take the chance, like Defoe did for the second one. You know, before, maybe that would have just skewed wide and it would have been nothing. So, you know, the cliche is you make your own luck, but I think there is something in that, and I think Sunderland need to be given credit for the fact that the battle to stay in the game, defended. There's more than one way to win a football match. You can't just go out and play the scintillating football, and that's the case for probably most of the teams in the bottom 10. They haven't got the ability, they haven't got the quality in the squad, they haven't got the vast finances to spend and compete. They can't attract certain players. You know, and the teams in the bottom, like look at QPR and Hull, QPR down, Hull are in serious bother of going down. The amount of money that they've spent, and they've got no further forward, and it's probably because they have to overspend on average players. And I think it's not as simple. You can't just expect everyone to be able to win football matches the same way, and Sunderland have found a way recently.
just, well, kind of found their way. I'm not sure. Don't know, Saturday.
Well, not kind of. They have. They've won 3 and 5. I know.
All right. Chris, other sides watching that would have been sort of, oh, God, I can't believe Sunderland have fluked that. But we've refrained from talking on here about games we should have won previously, because I'm a believer in, you know, you deserve where you finish, you deserve that, you know, where you end up. We've spoke about it before, the league table doesn't lie, all cliches, but it's true. However, we've been due that this season, haven't we? Because we look back at Adam Johnson getting a goal ruled out of West Brom at home. Well, there's nothing wrong with it, and that's cost us 2 points. Seb Larson getting fouled in the build-up to West Ham's winning goals cost us a point. I will never, ever get over the two handballs in the whole game at 1-1. That the referee didn't give, and also their equalising goal was lucky, wasn't it? Took a bounce off the surface and went in, so we were due one.
Yeah, I mean, they always say these type of things even themselves out. I think
that's a cliche I was trying to avoid.
I've already
put too many in.
I think we're still going to be waiting for it to even itself out, because Sunderland over the years, some of these decisions that have went against us have been absolutely ludicrous. I mean, every time we play a Hull,
as long as you keep away from Andre Mariner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, that's the thing. But you know, in terms of, you know, the second goal hitting off the phone going in, it's one of those things. It is lucky, but then would any other striker on the pitch have been standing where Defoe was standing? Would any other striker in the league have been standing there? Defoe's made a living from that sort of goal, and it all counts the same, you know.
But, and that's exactly the point, isn't it? I mean, for strikers to be in that position, you know, that's what it's all about. I mean, if they're not there, then it's not going to happen. And the point is that Sunderland were in the box and trying to score goals. I mean, you know, whether they're due it or not, I don't know. I think these things just happen, and you have to make the best of it, and you have to take advantage of it. And it's just pleasing to see what's happened in the last 2 or 3 games, because after the Palace game, you know, that second half, you know, I just thought, well, that's that, and that's because it was so, you know, it was so miserable that one goal goes in and then the other goals go in, and it was reminiscent, I thought, of Villa. And
you thought the new manager bounce had been and gone already by then, didn't you?
And he said that day, "I am very worried," and it was, yeah, well, too right, yeah.
But you look at the games he's had in charge, and like you can point at the West Ham game where, you know, maybe we should have had a point in that, and the Stoke game, I think Sunderland probably should have won that game in the second half, beat Newcastle, the disaster in Palace, and the rest of it. I mean, it's been okay. I mean, we haven't been unbelievable or spectacular, but at the same time, they've done enough in games to get wins, which we weren't doing before.
Is anybody interested in Dick Advocaat? Now, this was before the other games of the weekend, saying that 1 point should do it now. Which, I mean, if Hull go out and win one of those two games, 1 point isn't enough for us because they've got a better goal difference. I guess my point is, Chris, what I'm saying is, we feel this squad of players can't afford to try and coast through games. They aren't good enough, and they capitulate when they try and do that. So psychologically, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, Dick Advocaat telling them 1 point's enough, is that what this group of players needs to hear?
You couldn't possibly comment, really. I mean, you know, I don't quite know what to make of Advocaat, to be honest. We had this discussion before we started doing the podcast, and he's very strange in his interviews, and you don't quite know whether there is kind of method behind the madness, or whether he's just, you know, he's just very short and he hasn't got patience for anyone. I don't think he needs to.
Is it madness? Would you say it?
It's not madness. Just, you know, there's something behind the eyes there that you can't quite figure out, you know. And it's like, does he care, or is he just doing this for, you know, for something on the side? In his retirement.
Like, what else is he doing?
Well, exactly, yeah.
Well, he owns a chip shop, actually. He owns a chip shop back in Amsterdam, so that's his main business. No, but I think he's almost released because he knows he's only here for a very short spell of time. His press conferences are actually quite funny because they are very, very brief. And, you know, normally journalists, managers, whatever, you kind of feel yourselves out a little bit. You know someone's going to be there for a while. Are you going to have a relationship? All that kind of stuff goes on. Well, that's not. It's just not. He doesn't need to be friends with us. So he'll just say absolutely what's on his mind, which is usually a sentence of about 4 words.
I'm convinced that he's happy that it's short term now, because before the Crystal Palace game, he was getting asked the questions about staying on and stuff, and he was saying, well, the Sunderland fans will want me to stay on because I'm a good manager and we're going to stay up and all this stuff. Suddenly now it's like, no, well, you know, I think I'm out of here kind of thing. And you wonder if he thinks this long-term project is going to be hard work and I'm not the guy to do it.
Yeah, we'll just do the miracle and then I'll move on. Yeah. I'll leave you to the full next season. Mm. Yeah.
You'd be an idiot if you took the job. You'd be an idiot.
What about as a sort of advisor? That's quite a popular opinion. Now.
But we've got Lee Congdon. Why would you get involved with Sunderland Football Club?
Me personally.
I'm just saying. Why? If you were him, you're a 67-year-old bloke who's won all sorts of trophies. You're managing national team twice.
The Premier League.
He's got absolutely nothing to prove, though, is he? He's not going to prove anything here because it's going to go.
All he'll do, he'll go. That was a bit of a failure at the end of his career, wasn't it? After he gets sacked in after 28 games.
But if that's the case, he wouldn't have came in and associated himself with the job at all.
Well, because it was a lot of people looked at it as a lost cause, so what do you have to lose?
No, I think you're right that he's going to say that now. I'm just saying, I thought it was interesting before the Palace game, his opinion seemed to be different. It seems to have changed now. And I'm wondering if that's what Sunderland does there as a football club. We don't have a choice, that's the thing. That's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, has it changed? Because he sort of said... Yeah, it's usual for me for people to think I'm great. I mean, he was sort of saying that. But he did say after the match the weekend, and he says, no, we will get a divorce or whatever. But it's kind of quite funny. But yeah, I'm sure he'll get paid handsomely for staying up. So nice little gig, really.
If you talk about the style specifically, Chris, and the way he has Sunderland playing, in the last two games, Lee Catamol has made tackles quite high up the pitch. And they have resulted in chances that have led to goals. One a direct goal at Everton, one a penalty against Southampton. Now, I don't want to be a hypocrite because I liked what Gus Poyet was trying to do at Sunderland. But I think it's fair to say that under Gus Poyet, Catamol would have won that ball and the ball would have went sideways or would have went backwards. We're getting it forward quicker and it's further proof that's
to
what we
interject
need.
That, you kind of like what he was doing this season, last season, surely. I mean, there was a style there. There was a... You know, there was a definite attempt to build something, to play football. But this season, that just disappeared, surely.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was a big fan of Poyet as well. And, I do think we're a bit premature there. And I think he could have turned it around, but that's a different debate entirely. I loved what Poyet was doing, the way we were playing. It was, you know, the good times, it was a pleasure to watch. But, you know, if you're playing attractive football in your own half, it doesn't matter, does it? Because you're not scoring goals, or if you're not getting players in the box.
Was he even doing that in the end? Because I don't
not
know.
Not in the end, no.
I don't know what he was doing in the end. He wasn't doing as Advocaat is doing now. Yeah. And you know, Clearstyle defend, you know, the midfielders chase about, try and get the ball back, get the ball forward quickly, defend two banks of four almost off the ball, have the other two, three, you know, the two of the front three coming back and track them back. Because I've never thought Defoe would be tracking back to the extent he is now. So he wasn't going to that extreme, but he wasn't doing what he was trying to do before. He was a little bit lost, wasn't he? And identity was all gone.
I don't know if there is a clear identity with Advocaat, but certainly I think it's heavily based on work ethic, and he's willing players to get forward whenever they can and obviously track back as soon as they can. The fact that Defoe is defending is remarkable, and Defoe must obviously rate Advocaat if he's came into a new club. There's this new manager coming and told him to start defending. You know, if you're Jermaine Defoe, you're playing at Sunderland, you don't need to do that, do you? You're already a Premier League superstar. You don't need to be told what to do by someone you don't trust. So he's obviously left an impression on the players there.
Do you think Defoe would have signed that day if he found out his job description at Sunderland was going to be play on the outside of a front three and you're going to track
wing,
back?
Wing back.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, and you know, there have been games, I can't think which game it was, there's one particular where Defoe just looked lost. And it was like he looked...
Aston Villa at all.
Might have been Villa, yeah. And he looked really, really upset. And,
throwing his hands in the air every time the ball didn't go near him and stuff.
Yeah. And obviously... Well, you know, that's kind of welcome to the Northeast, Jermaine. But no, it's been, you know, it was great to see him putting that effort in. And as I said before, I don't think there's anything startling there. I think it is about getting players to perform to their level and you know, put that shift in. But I suppose what that does take is you have to know what the manager's getting at. So and I think that is what was lost with Poyet by the end. There was, you know, they weren't playing possession football, and they weren't playing any kind of football.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, that whole identity was lost. This identity is pretty rudimentary, but it's effective, and they know what they're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Which is very important, obviously. Gareth, I think if we had a list and it's labelled improved under Dick Advocaat, you put Sebastian Coetzee on that list now.
Definitely, alongside
marked improvement.
Mm, definitely. I don't know why that is, because he looked useless before. Let's be honest.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Poyet signed Quadras, and we know they're from the same country. But Quadras never looked like he was going to fit into that style of player, bringing the ball out from the back and knocking it about, does it? Because he looks like a typical British centre half, if anything.
Maybe it's just because he had to defend differently. We've probably been, I wouldn't say deep, but
he's almost been. You know, sometimes how you say forward players are given a license to play without fear and take players on and all that stuff. It's almost as if our defenders as well are being given license to defend no nonsense, put the ball into Rosette, it's not a problem. Mm. Where that probably wasn't true under Poyet.
Maybe not. I mean, unless you're Van Aanholt, when you just go running off with the ball. I mean, I don't know. He should have scored at the weekend, shouldn't he?
That didn't even make match of the day, that chance.
I didn't think it fit the narrative, did it? So that's probably why not. But that's what happens, isn't it? So someone does something good in a game, and I watched the Leicester game, and I think that they showed an overhead pass that he nearly played somebody in the left hand side. It might mean Villa or Leicester or something, and it was like an overhead pass. That nearly put somebody in, but it was about 10 or 15 yards away, and I was thinking, how can that get into the highlights?
The tale told by much of the day was Sunderland's snatch and grab a 2-0 win through two deflections.
A little bit.
They did. I mean, they had a chance after about.
They've been whinging all season about not being last on match of the day.
Yeah. But I know. But I mean, it goes back to what I said earlier, doesn't it? The outside of impression of what Advocaat's doing has probably been underplayed a little bit, but we're used to that now here, aren't we?
Probably for the best.
Do you think? Isn't
it? Probably for the best. Just do what you need to do, get on with it. And
Being underplayed after a win is quite all right, really, isn't it?
Mm. Well, you look at a team like Burnley, who got, everyone goes on about them and how fantastic they've been and all this. Well, they've only won one after Saturday, it's about 2 in 15 games or something. So, if you get everyone tells you how brilliant and plucky and fantastic you are and you've only won 2 in 15 and been the first team relegated, and I think I'd rather be underplayed.
Winds you up, doesn't it, about this sort of idea that Sunderland will look against Southampton because we won by scoring two penalties?
It's like penalties don't count in games. Of course they count in games. So deflections count in games. It all counts. You've got to get in players into the box to win penalties. You've got to commit defenders to win penalties. You've got to make teams make mistakes to win penalties. And that's their error, and you capitalise on it. That's how it works.
But Bradford's first goal against us whacked off O'Shea and flew in.
The thing is, when Sunderland scores all the many own goals, a plethora of own goals that we've scored in the last 18 months, nobody says, oh,
he
was unlucky.
That should be a DVD.
No one says he was unlucky, do they? They go, oh, he's rubbish. They say, oh, that was rubbish from Sunderland, and laugh at them. And you can't have it both ways. It's part and parcel of the game. That's what happens.
Chris, I love Supreme DVD, ready for Christmas. The greatest own goals of Sunderland.
Own goals and gaffes.
I was going to say the 100 greatest goals, but that would probably narrow it down to just the last two seasons, wouldn't it? And that would just narrow it down to Wes Brown and John O'Shea.
We'll get someone to present it who's doing the Empire this year. We'll get like Les Dennis or something like that. Les Dennis, all his own goals and gaffes, sponsored by ALS.
Own goals and gaffes has been. You can't bring that back.
No, we'll think of something slightly different, but not as good.
I know. If one of those DVDs did get brought out now, we'd feature heavily on it, didn't we? I remember buying that as a kid. Getting that as a kid and almost being disappointed because Sunderland weren't on it. My dad saying, you don't want us to be on something like this, son.
I'm trying to think of any howlers, but
Virginie's own goal.
Virginie's own goal would get in, obviously.
But that was the thing you were talking about, Quatez. I mean, so O'Shea goes off in the Southampton game and it's Quatez and Virginie. I mean, I think I said at the time, well, okay, what can possibly go wrong from this point? But they, by the end of the game, you weren't thinking about the defence at all because they did really well.
I think Virginie's, he's got issues, but I don't think he's anywhere near.
He's got footballing issues.
Yeah, but he's nowhere near as bad as people want to be. I think people go a bit. It's the hyperbole. It's either someone's awful or someone's.
His form has dipped a little bit since Advocaat.
That's what you'd expect. He's a player who's playing for a team who competed for the last 8 years in the bottom half of the Premier League. You tend to find that those types of players end up at Sunderland because if they were better than that, they'd be playing for someone else. And that's just the way it is. They're going to flitter in and out.
He's got something horrendous in him, hasn't he? I mean, he's got the potential to do something absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, well, it pretends hilarious later, but at the time, disappointing.
I just wish we could somehow incorporate him into the team without actually letting him play. Like maybe he's like half-time show or something like that because he is brilliant. It's just a disaster.
Ironic cult hero.
I don't know. You could play him like last game of the season, if we're safe, I reckon he should just play him like as a sweeper.
Yeah.
Against, like, just play him in front of the back four, and he can just do what he wants. Dribble around, dink it over people. He likes to dribble. He's quite good at dribbling statistically, apparently. So,
okay, I bet the listeners absolutely gutted that we've got to leave it there. We've got to cut it short this week. Apologies for that.
That was pathetic, wasn't it?
It just means there'll be more.
25 minutes.
It means there'll
George
be more
came
on
all the
Thursday.
Way here for 25 minutes.
When we do the Sun FM Into the Light with Michael Proctor, we'll speak about the game a little bit more. We've had a whiz through that, so apologies for that. But at least there is a show this week because we didn't have one last week. So
I will promise.
It's going downhill for us.
Well, I can't promise anything. Next week, I think we might do a proper programme. This is the first we've done about 150 podcasts or something in 2 years, and I think this is the first time we've had 2 weeks of technical issues. So.
Just don't press any buttons next week, guys.
No button pressing?
Don't
no,
press
apparently.
Any
don't
at
turn
all.
A computer off after being told to turn a computer off.
Restarted, he said, not turn it off. Okay.
You said turn it off and on again, so
right,
I turned it off.
Guys are my witness. People are going to ask them. Okay, right. I'll not put you through all this. Thanks for listening. Over and out.